And the court will proceed to the second case, Annex Books versus the City of Indianapolis. Mr. Chaffron?
May it please the court, I'm Steve Chaffron on behalf of the appellants. Your Honors, when this case began in June of 2003, the City of Indianapolis had on its books a law licensing adult bookstores. And under that law, at the time this lawsuit was filed, defined an adult bookstore as an establishment that had a preponderance of its stock in trade in books, magazines, periodicals, and other expressive materials that had an emphasis on specified sexual activities or specified anatomical areas. After Annex filed suit, the city sought several continuances of Annex's motion for a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction, and it amended its law. And the amendments to the law did two things. It dramatically and drastically altered the definition of what an adult bookstore was. Whereas before, the law defined an adult bookstore as one having more than 50% of its stock in trade in adult materials, the new law changed the definition and reduced that to 25% of either its retail floor space, its stock in trade, or 25% of its weekly revenues derived from the sale of adult products.
What evidence, if any, did you present establishing that the city's 25% provision was not narrowly tailored, as opposed to evidence generally attacking the connection between adult businesses as a whole and adverse secondary effects?
Well, there was no evidence in the record regarding the 25%. That burden is the city's burden. The city has the burden of demonstrating the nexus between the uses to which it subjects to these under the secondary effects analysis. It was the city that had the burden of bringing to the court's attention evidence that showed that that its interest in reducing secondary effects related to these particular kinds of businesses, namely businesses that had 75% of their non-adult...
Yeah, but in refuting the city's evidence of adverse secondary effects, did you present any evidence that those effects were tied only to certain types of businesses or to businesses with a substantial percentage of adult businesses, you know, as opposed to those near the 25% mark?
We presented the testimony and the report of Dr. Linz, who did two things. Dr. Linz did what Alameda Books, the plurality, said it could do. One, he attacked the data on which the city relied, the studies that it presented, and said that these were not reliable. And the other thing he did was he conducted a study of Indiana crime over a five-year period from 1998 to 2003. And he mapped the crime, he looked at the police reports that were generated, he did a hotspot analysis, namely by looking at crime in the vicinity of the adult bookstores as newly defined.
What do you mean by a hotspot analysis?
Well, a hotspot analysis, Your Honor, is looking at crime within a 200-foot, a 500-foot, and 1,000-foot.
No, that tells you how far he's looking using the available data.
Well,
what kind of analysis is it? You know, I looked for the standard statistical tools like multivariate regression. They're not there. In fact, in the study that's in the record, none of the tools is explained. He announces his conclusion. He doesn't explain how he reached it. There are a few circles drawn around bookstores, but circles drawn around bookstores are a considerable distance short from good statistical analysis.
The notion that the adult bookstores are associated with adverse secondary effects...
No. Are you going to answer my question, which is, what did he do? What statistical tools did he use?
Dr. Linz looked at the addresses where the bookstores were located.
Yes, but how? Did he use a particular statistical tool? Did he use a Loggit analysis? Is this a Probit analysis? I can't for the life of me tell what he did.
If it's not in the report, Your Honor, then...
It's not.
Okay. Well, then I can't tell you precisely what he did.
For all I know, he put on a big turban and he went, there it is.
No, he didn't, Your Honor. But he looked at the police data that the city provided over that five-year period of time. The hotspot analysis is also explained in the city's experts report by looking at the crime surrounding the number of actual crime events surrounding the particular addresses.
See,
notice, by the way, that he excluded all sex-related crimes like indecent exposure and prostitution.
Yes, he did, Your Honor.
It struck me as rather like excluding drunk driving and public drunkenness when trying to figure out the effects of a tavern in a neighborhood.
Well, not necessarily, Your Honor, because if you look at Dr. McCleary's report, Dr. McCleary also pointed out that the Part 2 UCR crimes are not a stable indicator of whether the adult businesses are associated with adverse secondary effects. McCleary was the city's expert. And he...
See, I think what, you know, Judge Easterbrook is trying to get to is this. The plaintiff's expert... your expert challenged the studies, but there's nothing in that testimony that really discredits the studies to the point that lawmakers couldn't, you know, rely on them in good faith. In other words, when it comes to assigning weight to one study over another, it's the legislative process that's the proper forum rather than the courts. And we just don't have that. You know, we don't have enough here to know.
Let me answer your question this way, Your Honor. Alameda Books said that the city bears the burden of coming forward with some evidence to show that its ordinance is designed to further the interest of reducing adverse secondary effects. The city, in the preamble to the newly adopted ordinance that changed the definition of an adult bookstore, cited a number of studies and thus met its initial burden. Under Alameda Books, under the pluralities reasoning, the court said a bookstore plaintiff can respond in two ways. It can either demonstrate that it relied on shoddy data, or it can present studies of its own that contradict the findings.
Yeah,
and
well,
that's what Dr.
That was the burden of my question. The question is whether Lynn's laid a glove on the city study, and the thing that's included in the record by Linz is not reputable social science research. Indeed, it wouldn't pass muster as an undergraduate research paper.
Well, Your Honor,
it doesn't contain any professional level statistical analysis. Now, maybe your position would be that he did lay a glove on the city studies by showing that the city studies were equally unprofessional. But what do you got when you've got a world of two undergraduate level studies and a statute? Usually you go with the statute.
Well, what you have, Your Honor, is you have a disputed issue of fact, because what the city did in response to Dr. Lynn's report that said that there were no elevated secondary effect criminal relationship between regarding the adult bookstores, they came back and they said, we've got these 41 arrests for public indecency at Annex Books. But that doesn't answer the question. That really begs the question of what about Keystone, what about Lafayette, and what about Newflix, which were not adult bookstores as previously defined. And it doesn't answer the question of narrow tailoring. Annex was the only business that was subject to the city's licensing law at the time this lawsuit was filed. And when the city changed its law, it brought within the scope of the law a whole category of businesses, these 25% businesses that the city hasn't shown are related to adverse secondary effects. There's nothing in any of the city's studies that suggest that a bookstore, a retail establishment that has 75% of its inventory in non-adult materials causes secondary effects.
You just made an interesting proposition. I want to be sure that you believe it's true, which is that none of the studies that the city has cited in that long preamble, so long one can be confident that no one in the city council read them, but none of the studies the city has cited in that long preamble dealt with book-only stores.
I don't believe they did.
They were all stores with video booths or separate areas where you're going to get a lot of indecent exposure problems.
I believe that's the case, Your Honor.
You believe that's the case.
Except for Annex Books, of course.
Yes, but the studies, particularly the studies that appear in the city's appendix, they don't define, even though there's studies about adult businesses, they don't define what an adult business is, either in the Indianapolis study, the Phoenix study. There's no definition. And in that regard, what this law does is really akin to what happened in RVS, where the city tried to regulate, under the guise of secondary effects, an exotic dance establishment that restricted clothed performers. And what this court said was, well, secondary effects may be the fine rationale, but there's absolutely no nexus between adverse secondary effects and the kinds of businesses that you seek to regulate here. And that's what this is. There was at least, at the very least, a genuine issue of material fact to be decided at a trial as to what the basis of bringing these businesses in that only that can be deemed an adult bookstore, subject them to licensing, subject them to hours of operation restrictions.
Do you think, by the way, that any of the Renton and Alameda Books requirements apply to laws like this? Now, the statutes that were involved in Renton and Alameda Books are the statutes that either segregate all adult establishments into a red light zone, or in most cases keep them far away from schools and other places and leave them only a few places where they can locate. And I can understand why the justices might actually want to see some data for those kinds of concerns. But as I gather, the Indianapolis ordinance doesn't do either of those things. It just says, we want you licensed. We want the person at the front desk to have a clear sight of any special video booths, right? And we want you to close at midnight. Beyond that, is there anything there? I mean, why would that kind of ordinance require any empirical study at all? I mean, it's the same kind of thing that's required of taverns, for example. Nobody thinks that you have to have a special study to close taverns at midnight.
The answer is these are expressive businesses, Your Honor. And if this is deemed as an alleged content-neutral time, place, and manner restriction of the way speech of a speech business, then the court needs to engage in that analysis.
By the way, when do taverns have to close in Indianapolis?
I don't know. Adult cabarets with liquor licenses are not subject to this particular ordinance.
Well,
I don't know when taverns...
This particular ordinance, I'm sure they are subject to plenty of ordinances.
Yes, in state regulation. When do they have to close, Your Honor? I don't know. But I
suppose it's midnight. I mean, suppose your clients are being treated just like taverns. Why would that require special justification?
Because a tavern's not engaged in the speech business. And when the city seeks to regulate...
You don't get special constitutional rights. The rule is you can't discriminate against speakers. I understand that. But if you're being treated just like other adult businesses that pose some crime risk, and that's why I singled out taverns, because my bet is equivalent to the 41 arrests for public indecency, there are probably 41 arrests at a tavern in a year for public indecency for urination or for public drunkenness or something like that. So you've got other kinds of things that create policing problems, and I'm just wondering how Indianapolis treats them.
I don't know. I don't know, Your Honor.
So how could we say that they're discriminating against speakers?
Because this ordinance defines the uses to which it is subject by the content of the speech they choose to disseminate. A bookstore could have, under this ordinance, 10% of its retail stock in trade in a back room of a mom-and-pop video store. And if it derives 25% of its weekly revenue from the rental or sale of those videos to citizens, it's going to be subject to these regulations. They're forced to close on Sunday, even though more than 75% of their inventory and stock in trade is in non-adult materials. And that places a burden on expression. You can't reduce the secondary effect by cutting down the speech. That's precisely what Justice Kennedy said in Alameda Books, which this court has held as the controlling opinion. And that's precisely what the city has done here. Mm-hmm. This law is not narrowly tailored. And there were issues of fact that ought to be tried before the trial court to resolve these issues. There were issues of fact, and summary judgment in the city's favor was inappropriate. And we'd ask this court to reverse the decision and remand this case. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
I have a question before you go. And that was whether or not you could identify any case in which an Indiana court has held that it lacked jurisdiction over a challenge to a license denial.
I can't, Your Honor, because the majority of cases are coming from municipal boards and licensing boards. The Marion Superior Court's jurisdiction is a creature of statute. And the case that Judge Barker relied on, the Oriental Health Spa case, simply presumed that jurisdiction existed. There's no discussion in the case.
Could you answer my colleague's question? Because
yes.
It's one I plan to ask, too.
Okay.
Has any state case said that there is no jurisdiction?
Not that we are aware of,
okay.
Your Honor.
The
and that we've
no.
cited.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Schaffern? Mr. Poulakidis?
If it may please the Court, my name is Costas Poulakidis. I'm Assistant Corporation Counsel for the City of Indianapolis. This issue is not an issue. The issue in this case is not an issue of fact. Rather, it's an issue of law, whether the city had sufficient evidence to find that there were adverse secondary effects associated with the adult businesses within its community.
Yes. Let's just get okay.
Right ahead.
Okay. Because you provided evidence of the adverse secondary effects of such businesses, but did that evidence differentiate among types of businesses? In other words, specifically, did you present any evidence that businesses with only 25% of floor space inventory or I guess revenue related to adult products still presented a danger of adverse secondary effects?
Your Honor, the answer to that, whether the city provided specific evidence, specific findings to whether it was 25% of the floor space, is no in that case. What the city relied upon...
Do any of the studies cited in the preamble deal with, say, 25% book-only establishments without viewing booths?
In the studies, no, they do not.
None of them.
From my reading of the studies,
isn't
no.
Is that a problem, though?
No, Your Honor, it's not.
Under Renton?
No.
I'm sure that your position, if none of the studies dealt with them, your position then has to be that any study showing any adverse effect of any adult establishment justifies any legislation involving a different kind of establishment. And I don't think that Alameda Books allows that.
I would agree with you that Alameda Books does not allow that, but then again, that's not our positions.
But it is your position if you concede, as you just did in response to my question, that none of the studies the city has relied on dealt with book-only establishments, let alone book-only establishments at the 25% level. If they're all dealing with adult performance establishments or places where there are booths and potentially prostitution or indecent exposure or something like that, if they're all dealing with that, you've got a different critter and, on that assumption, no evidence at all.
Your Honor, cities don't need to justify, find evidence that 25% is the magic bullet.
Say that again.
Cities do not need to show findings that 25% in this case
of course not.
Is the magic
you
bullet.
Do a regression analysis. You can put in percentage of revenues from adult books as an independent variable in a regression.
Your Honor.
So far as I know, as far as I can tell from looking at the city's own study, from looking quickly at a couple of these other things, none of these studies is professionally reputable. Not one.
Your Honor, what's problematic with doing a regression analysis is Indianapolis is not a small suburban city. Neither is it a New York Times square. You're going to find differences depending on the type of community. Throughout the nation, cities are experimenting with different forms of how to categorize what the starting point is.
Look,
some use a different...
That I can understand, and I could have understood an argument mm-hmm. that the kind of legislation Indianapolis has adopted is not subject to the requirements of Renton against Alameda Books, and I explored that briefly with your adversary. Mm-hmm. But the city hasn't made that argument in this case. It hasn't made the argument that it is free to experiment without the burden of having any empirical support.
They do have.
It's argued this case on the assumption that Renton and Alameda Books apply, and then we've got to take it seriously.
The city legislature made established the ordinance based on findings that these businesses had adverse secondary effects. The idea that
unfortunately you've just conceded that it didn't. It did not have any data, even at the sophomore level, showing that these kinds of establishments had any adverse effects.
No.
It had data showing that other kinds of establishments had adverse effects.
Well, these types of establishments were part of the establishments that all these studies, all the judicial opinions, have looked at. What I have conceded is that there was not specific findings that 25% is the magic bullet.
Well, like for instance, would 2% of floor space, inventory or revenue, whatever, related to adult products be enough? And if not, why not? In other words, if the city is going to impose a 25% cutoff, shouldn't it have to present evidence that businesses above that threshold are the ones that trigger the adverse secondary effects?
Your Honor, what the city could do is adopt an ordinance that says a significant amount of the product sold there, and then be able to use its discretion to pull in, let's say, a business that is 50%, 2%, 10%. By providing a bright line, it's providing for the community a definition as to this is, if you reach that 25%, in our community, we consider that to be sufficient to bring in these adverse effects.
I don't know if it matters at this point. Wait a minute. Is there any evidence in the record as to how the city arrived at the 25% cutoff? I mean, I'm just really, whether was that arbitrary or was it related to the governmental interest?
The 25% was based off of what the city council members felt was a reasonable estimation of a reasonable common sense estimation of what would be able to categorize these establishments as adult business.
And was that after reading the studies?
It was after not only the studies, but also in talking to people in the community as far as what types of businesses establish it. The plaintiff appellants in this case, they undoubtedly far exceed that 25%. And it's these type of establishments that are being drawn in.
Well, there are some of the plaintiffs who exceed 25% but don't exceed 50% and are book only. No booths, no live performances, no nothing. Let me ask you another of the questions I asked your adversary. When do taverns have to close in Indianapolis?
I can't speak specifically as far as what's on the statute, but generally, depending on the day, 1 o'clock, could be 2:30.
Can taverns be open on Sundays?
I believe they have to have some type of be a food establishment as well.
Is there any data that Indianapolis has which suggests that there are worse secondary effects of being an adult bookstore than there are of a tavern?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe, from my knowledge, that there are.
But then why would adult bookstores have shorter hours and Sunday closings when taverns are open longer and can be open on Sunday?
Well, largely one is because in reviewing the judicial opinions when this case was when this ordinance was enacted, it looked to Schultz versus Cumberland, which upheld that those hours of operation. Also, from a commonsensical perspective, it allows that having those hours of operation, which seem to be a traditional standard hours that are applicable, it allows law enforcement to mitigate the crime that occurs at night because these establishments aren't open, and during the day be able to focus their efforts on sending in law enforcement or officers to make sure that the laws are being complied with, or more so that the patrons are complying with the laws while they're enjoying their the expression that's being provided there.
Is that, by the way, how Indianapolis deploys its vice squad? The vice squad shows up at the adult bookstores at 11 to make sure the patrons leave in an orderly way, and then the limited supply of officers heads over to the taverns to close them up in an orderly way?
No, it's not. But in terms of
that would at least be a rational justification for staggered closing hours.
It may be, but again, the
alternative, of course, is the patrons of the adult bookstores are headed to the taverns at midnight.
That might be one possible answer.
They're too tired.
Your Honor, again, this ordinance, Indianapolis is in the situation in terms of enacting ordinance that
Let me come back to Alameda. Alameda says if the city's data, if the jurisdiction's data are critiqued, then the district court has to hold an evidentiary proceeding. Now, the district court never held such an evidentiary proceeding. The Lynn study certainly critiqued the city's data. It suggested, I think probably correctly, that the studies on which the city relied are sophomoric. It suggested this in a sophomoric fashion, right? We don't have anything really good. But there was not only no evidentiary hearing, but the district court never even discussed the Lynn study. And I read your brief with some... Since the district court didn't discuss it, I read your brief with some close attention to see what you had to say about it, and you don't mention it. How, given the view of the plurality in Lynn's, that this has, sorry, the plurality in Alameda, that this kind of thing has to be worked out, do we just ignore it? Now, the district court said, well, I'm going to ignore it because there were 40 arrests for public indecency at Annex Books. Doesn't say anything about the number of arrests for public indecency at other places, that is, the book-only stores. And I don't know whether 40 is large or small. How many arrests for public indecency are there in a year at the average tavern in Indianapolis?
I can't speak to that.
So we don't know whether 40 is large or small. For all we know, if an adult bookstore replaces a tavern, the amount of crime goes down. So how do we avoid the evidentiary hearing that Alameda Books says is required?
Your Honor, what the trial court did correctly was review the information that was submitted to it in order to determine whether there was a reasonable basis for enacting the ordinance, and it found that it did. It went on to review the Lynn study and found that it was not very credible.
No, it didn't. It did not say the Lynn study was not very credible. There's no reason to believe that Professor Lynn's is lying. Nor did it review the statistical adequacy of the techniques Professor Lynn's used or didn't use. Well, I can't really tell what he used. Judge said she didn't have to resolve that because there were 40 arrests for public indecency at Annex Books. And you've just agreed that A, has nothing to do with the adequacy of his study, and B, you can't tell me whether that number is large or small in relation to arrests at a regular at a tavern or any other establishment.
Well, Your Honor, no, I can't say whether that number is large or small.
Right. But let me put it differently. Mm-hmm. When the Supreme Court says in Renton and Alameda Books that you need a study, it means systemic analysis. 40 arrests at place A in a year is an anecdote. It's the antithesis of systemic analysis. Right, you can't say we're going to ignore the systemic analysis because I've got an anecdote. It doesn't fit within the framework of the Supreme Court. So I come back to my question. How do we avoid the evidentiary hearing that the plurality opinion in Alameda Books says is required?
Your Honor, because Alameda Books does not require us to conduct a study on whether we should open at whether we should close at 12 o'clock or 12:01, whether the percentage should be 24% or 25%. What it requires is that the ordinance be reasonable and be reasonably tailored in order to allow the city to regulate the adverse secondary effects that have been established at these establishments and do so in a way that does not suppress speech.
We may just be talking by one another. On ordinary rational basis review, you're describing the right question, right? The judge figures out whether a reasonable person could have thought this law served any purpose. And if the answer is yes, the judge doesn't second-guess it. It's not done in an evidentiary way. Alameda Books and Renton don't use rational basis analysis. Otherwise, they wouldn't have called for an evidentiary hearing. So my question is, since we're not in the world of rational basis analysis, what do we do? Right, we've gone through what the district court did, which is say there's 40 arrests at Establishment A. That's an anecdote. It's not systemic. Where do we get the systemic analysis? Unless your position is the city always wins these cases, but then what do we do with what the plurality said in Alameda Books?
Your Honor, what the court needs to do is it needs to allow cities to have that flexibility. If there is, I realize I'm going back to a reasonable nexus.
There wasn't a single member of the Supreme Court who said that. There were four justices who voted against Los Angeles outright. Four justices who said that it's contingent on an evidentiary hearing if the data are called into question. And I couldn't quite figure out what Justice Kennedy was saying.
Well,
but you haven't got a single justice who took the view you're now articulating.
Your Honor, what the trial court needed to do was, and it did so correctly, look at that nexus, determine that was reasonable, and not going into weighing the burden shift. And indeed, when it looked at the evidence, when it discusses the evidence, it did so in a manner that essentially said that that burden had not shifted back to the city to counter the evidence that the plaintiffs provided.
By the way, why do you think that Linz doesn't call the city's analysis into question? I mean, normally this is the kind of thing that would be in an advocate's brief, but since your brief is silent on this, what do you think the problems in the Linz study are?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, there was a number. First of all, the city does not necessarily have to take the evidence that the plaintiffs are submitted. It needs to rely on the evidence that it chooses. There are a number of problems with the Linz study. For instance, the 41 instances of arrest for public indecency weren't even included in his study. Again, that would go back to looking into the weight of the evidence and what's determined. The trial court was proper in not going down that path, but indeed basically saying there is a reasonable...
So that's it? The only fault you find in what Linz had to say... I mean, Linz said two things. Linz explained why he thought the Indianapolis' 1984 study was worthless statistically. You haven't given me any response to that. And the second was Linz's own study, and your response to that is only that he excluded misdemeanor arrests.
No, Linz's study...
That's your only objection?
Well, I would also agree with you, the objections you made to the plaintiff's argument that there are multiple studies that can be conducted. The city presented the studies that it relied upon were 20 judicial opinions, 25 years of analysis involving 34 studies and 12 cities. Those studies should be sufficient for them to rely upon.
I don't think this is a question of numbers. At least the Supreme Court in Alameda didn't say, since there are now 25 studies, we don't worry about this anymore, even if they're all statistical bilge, or even if they're all completely irrelevant to the statute that was actually enacted. Right? Suppose you've got powerful data showing that there's a huge upsurge in prostitution. Mm-hmm. In the neighborhood of any adult store that has live on-site entertainment. See also New Dancing in Taverns. Right? Suppose you've got just absolute statistical lock on that. Do you have anything that supports the regulation of book-only establishments? I should think the answer is no. But here we are. Isn't that our situation?
Essentially, by requiring cities to do this, it would have to go in and subcategorize studies on the massage parlor with the video store,
look,
and it becomes impractical.
You understand what a regression analysis is.
Yes.
Don't need separate studies on separate percentages. These can be got out of a multivariate regression for free, you might think. But none of these studies, as I say, is professionally reputable statistics.
Once again, I would contend that it isn't. The standard isn't that they must rely on the studies that have one type of study versus another type, but it's the information that's contained in it, what it shows, that indeed that when there is a business, that an adult business within a certain neighborhood, that prostitution goes up 700%, that homes don't appreciate at the same pace as others. Those are the type of information.
The Indianapolis study doesn't show that, by the way. It doesn't even purport to show that.
No, the other studies.
The Indianapolis study is statistically deficient because it's a cross-tabulation. That is, it's a cross-section and therefore does not show causation. It shows either, think about the property value claim, it shows either that adult establishments depress property value or that adult establishments choose to locate in the low-rent district.
Your Honor,
it's an elementary proposition of statistics that cross-tabulations, cross-section, do not establish and do not permit an inference of causation. And if you said anything else on your statistics exam, you'd flunk out of college.
Your Honor,
here we have the Indianapolis study. It's the kind of thing that would get a freshman statistics student flunked out.
Your Honor, it's also the same study that the American Center for Law and Justice cited as one of the best studies at the time. This is exactly the type of back and forth that the court should not be engaging in.
What is the evidence from which we can conclude as a matter of law that the ordinance is narrowly tailored? Because isn't that the bottom line here?
You know, I see my time is up. May I conclude here? The evidence that shows that it's narrowly tailored is that it allows, it does not pull in other establishments, in that we do not have here a situation where we have the Blockbuster Video here or the mom and pop store coming in here. If indeed that is the case, that issue will arise. But in terms of making it narrowly tailored, there needs to be that deference, that flexibility for the government to provide those narrowly tailored ordinances that allow for them to combat the secondary effects, but also don't suppress unreasonably and provide alternatives to the expression that's being discussed.
And what was that evidence?
Well, Your Honor, if your question is going, what is the evidence to establish that 25% is permissible, there isn't specific evidence that shows that 25% is the magic bullet. However, what the ordinance was based off and how it was written was following judicial opinions and, was used in looking at the empirical data that established a reason for having this ordinance, and also looking at other ordinances that have been drafted that were found constitutional by this jurisdiction and other jurisdictions as reasonable. It followed those precedences and crafted the ordinance that was found to be narrowly tailored in other jurisdictions. So the question might fall onto that it has more to do also with looking towards not only the empirical data, but also the prior legal precedents that have been written by previous ordinances. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Shaffron.
The city, having conceded that they have no studies that show a bookstore only cause secondary effects, the city's concession that it has no studies showing that the threshold 25% cause secondary effects, there can be no debate that this law is not narrowly tailored to further a substantial governmental interest. The case needs to be reversed and remanded back to the district court. Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.